Nevada's gambling goes online.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, February 22nd, and Nevada has become the first state in the country to approve interstate online gaming. The governor signed a bill yesterday afternoon that allows Nevada to negotiate online gambling agreements directly with other states. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark has more.
The bill was signed into law in the same room where, 80 years ago, Nevada legalized gambling in good old-fashioned brick-and-mortar casinos. Now, the state hopes to get an early advantage in the online frontier. Nevada State Assemblyman William Horn sponsored the bill. He spoke with local TV station KTVN.
Online gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry. We've been missing out for years on that revenue, and we hope to see start benefiting.
Lawmakers hope online gambling license fees, which will cost $500,000 a pop, will bring new revenue to the state, and that by being the first to legalize, they can set the standards. Professor Richard McGowan at Boston College, a gambling expert who happens to be a priest, says Nevada is also betting that online gaming is not going to cannibalize the state's real-world casinos.
And I guess what their rationale is that when people will like to learn to gamble online, but will want to come to the real thing in Nevada.
McGowan says it's a way the industry could recruit new gamblers at very low costs. New Jersey and Delaware could be the next to legalize interstate online gambling. I'm Chrissy Clark from Marketplace.
Well, the Oscars are this weekend, and I don't know about you, but I have got a lot of movies left to see, which brings us to Jason Bellini of The Wall Street Journal, who has been looking into just how easy it would be to see all the films before this Sunday. And Jason joins me now. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so how long would it take to see all of the Oscar-nominated films?
About 99 hours. If you want to say. And that's, well, that doesn't include the shorts.
The shorts would be, that would be more than that. Yeah,
not that much more. But yeah, it would be a little bit more time.
And so would you be able to do that if you wanted to, and how much would it cost?
Well, if you want to see the Best Picture nominees, that's the easiest thing to accomplish because you can go to most of the major theater chains. AMC, in fact, is offering this weekend that you can watch all 9 Best Picture films for $60, which I don't think is humanly possible because I did the math. And when you add it all up, that's over 20 hours of film. That doesn't count bathroom breaks. Doesn't count, you know, the previews either.
Going out to get popcorn and soda and whatever.
Exactly. No breaks if you want to catch all of them.
Well, now, of course, we have a very different landscape when it comes to entertainment because we can watch a lot of this stuff from home, right? Couldn't you go on iTunes or Amazon or Netflix and see some of these films?
Some of them, but not all of them. You know, so the categories that I often wish that I'd seen the films, and you can catch those on iTunes and many of them on some of these other services. And those are, you know, your best documentaries and the shorts. You can catch all of those on iTunes. But turns out one of the best places you go is your video on demand. If you go to your...
Through your cable provider.
Through your cable provider, yeah. Comcast has 13 of them, and it only costs about $6 or $7. But then, you know, some of the big films, if you want to watch Argo, for example, on iTunes, it's going to cost you $20. You can't rent it. They make you buy it.
Which would cost you more than if you just went to the theater to see it.
That's exactly right. And then also, you know, in the theater, that's the only place to catch most of the Best Picture films. For example, Lincoln. I mean, that's been out for a long time, but you have to go to the theater to see that. It's not available online anywhere.
On any of them?
As far as I could tell. You know, it's always changing. In fact, you know, as I was doing my reporting on this, new things were being added. But most of those things are reserved for after the Oscars. They make you wait, put it on hold.
So with all of your research on this topic, did you come up with the Best Picture yourself?
I'm a big fan of Argo, but I'm glad I caught it in the theater because I don't want to pay $20 to buy it on iTunes. So you can get it for $15 on Amazon, and so maybe it's worth $15 on Amazon. Great film, but we'll see.
Jason Bellini, reporter and producer for The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
The U.S. Olympic Committee is looking for bids to host the 2024 Summer Olympics, and it sent out letters to 35 mayors around the U.S. New York, Chicago, and L.A. are on the list, but so are Tulsa and Columbus. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
Chicago spent $10 million just to put in a bid to host the 2016 Olympics. When they got rejected, the city was not reimbursed.
So the question then becomes, why would a city make this costly bid?
Mark Spiegel is the co-author of a paper on the economic benefits of hosting mega events like the Olympics. He says the answer to that question is that for some cities in the developing world, the Olympics can put them on the world stage in a way that does lead to economic benefits. But those benefits don't have the same appeal for the U.S., which has been around for a while. The cost of the 2024 Olympics is expected to exceed $3 billion. So why would the USOC ask a city like Tulsa, Oklahoma, which has a total city budget of under $1 billion, to put in a bid?
It's pretty cheap for them to send out letters of intention to a bunch of different cities.
Victor Matheson is a sports economist. Even if the USOC has no intention of picking a city like Tulsa, Matheson says the more bids, the better, because it increases competition. Cities try to one-up each other, ensuring the lavish spectacle we've come to expect from the Olympic Games. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
And finally, to an Olympic-sized fish in Lake Tahoe, where researchers discovered a goldfish that was nothing like the one I had as a kid that fit inside a little glass bowl. It was a foot and a half long and weighed 4.2 pounds. I'm guessing this goldfish would not be afraid of the house cat. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.